Chapter 56. Sean and Saul stood beside the little Scotch cart, and Imbijani brought them coffee. "My God, it's cold enough to freeze the hanger off a brass monkey." Sean cupped his hands around the mug and sipped noisily. "At least you've got a hood to keep your tip warm," Saul retorted. "We'd better get moving before we all freeze to the ground." "Dawn in an hour," Sean agreed. "Time to start walking our beat." And he called across to Imbijani. "Kill the fire and bring my horse." In double file, with a Scotch cart bumping along in the rear, they started on the outward leg of their patrol. In the last 4 days, they had covered the same ground as many times, tacking backwards and forwards across the beat that Aitchison had assigned them. The grass was brittle with frost and crunched under the horses' hooves. While ahead of them the Zulu trackers ranged like gun dogs, and behind the troopers huddled miserably in their greatcoats, Sean and Saul picked up their endless discussion from the point at which they had left it the previous evening. Already they had reached so far into the future that they were talking of a federation under responsible government that would encompass all the territories south of the Zambezi River. "That's what Rhodes has proposed for the last 10 years, Saul pointed out. "I don't want any part of that wily bastard," Sean spoke emphatically. "He'll keep us tied forever to the apron strings of Whitehall. The sooner we get rid of him and Milner, the better, say I." "You want to get rid of imperial rule?" Saul asked. "Of course. Let's end this war and send all of them back across the sea. We can run our own affairs."
"Colonel, it seems to me you are fighting on the wrong side," Saul remarked, and Sean chuckled.
"But seriously, Saul..." He never finished. Bijani came out of the darkness, running with silent purpose so that Sean checked his horse and felt the skin along his arms prickle with a nervous excitement.
"Imbijani!"
"Mabuna!"
"Where? How many?"
He listened to Imbijani's hurried explanation, then swung round to face Sergeant Major Eccles, who was breathing heavily down his neck.
"Your birds, Eccles. 100 or so of them, only a mile ahead and coming straight towards us."
Sean's voice was tight with the same excitement that made Eccles's moustache wriggle like an agitated caterpillar on the impassive oval of his face.
"Deploy in single line. They'll walk right on top of us in the dark."
"Dismounted, sir?"
"No,"
Sean answered.
"We'll gun charge them as soon as they show. But for God's sake, keep it quiet."
As Sean sat his horse with Saul beside him, the two files of troopers opened on each side of them. There was no talking, only the clicking of iron-shod hooves on rock, the rustling of men struggling out of their heavy greatcoats, and the soft rattle and snick of breech bolts opening and closing.
"Once more into the breach, dear friends," whispered Saul, but Sean did not answer, because he was wrestling with his fear.
Even in the cold of dawn his hands were damp. He wiped them on the thighs of his breeches and slid his rifle from the scabbard.
"What about the Maxims?" Saul asked.
"No time to set them up."
Sean knew his voice was hoarse, and he cleared his throat before he went on.
"We won't need them. It's 6-1.
He looked along the silent line of his men, a dark line against the grass that was paling in the dawn. He could see that each of his troopers leaned forward in the saddle with his rifle held across his lap. The tension was a tangible thing in the half-darkness. Even the horses were infected. They moved beneath their riders, shifting their bodies, nodding with impatience. Please God, let none of them wicker now. And he peered ahead into the darkness, waiting with his own fear and the fear of his men so strong that the Boers must surely smell it. A patch of greater darkness in the dawn, ahead and slightly to the left of center. Sean watched it for a few seconds and saw it move slowly, like the moonlit shadow of a tree on the open felt.
"Are you sure they're Boers?" Saul whispered.
And the doubt startled Sean. While he hesitated, the shadow spread towards them, and now he could hear the hooves.
"Are they Boers?"
Desperately, he searched for some sign that would allow him to loose his charge.
"Are they Boers?"
But there was no sign, only the dark advance and the small sounds of it, the click and creak in the dawn. They were close now, less than 100 yards, although it was impossible to tell with certainty, for the dark moving mass seemed to float towards them.
"Sean!"
Saul's whisper was cut off by the shrill, nervous whinny of his horse. The sound was so unexpected that Sean heard the man beside him gasp. Almost immediately came the sign for which Sean waited.
"Vista!"
The challenge from ahead was in the guttural of the tarl. "Charge!" yelled Sean, and hit his horse with his heels. Instantly the whole of his line jumped forward to hurl itself upon the boars. Forward in the pounding hooves, forward in the shouting, in the continuous crackle of rifle fire that sparkled along the line, with his fear left behind him, Sean spurred at them. Steadying the butt of his rifle under his right armpit, firing blind, blending his voice with the yelling of 600 others, leading slightly in the centre of the line, he took his commando down upon the boars. They broke before the charge. They had to break, for they could not hope to stand against it. They swung and drove their exhausted horses back towards the south. "Bunch up!" roared Sean. "Bunch on me!" And his line shortened, so they charged knee to knee in a solid wall of men and horses and gunfire, before which the Boers fled in wild despair. Directly in Sean's path lay a struggling, badly wounded horse, with its rider pinned underneath it. Jammed into the charge, he could not swerve. "Up, boy!" he shouted, and lifted his horse with his knees and his hands, clearing the tangle and stumbling as they landed, then forward again in the urgent, jostling clamour of the charge. "We're gaining!" yelled Saul. "This time we've got them!" The horse beside him hit a hole and went down with its leg breaking like a pistol shot. The trooper was thrown from it, high and clear, turning in the air as he fell. The line closed to fill the gap and pounded on over the grassland. "There's a copy ahead!" Sean shouted, as he saw the ragged loom of it against the dawn sky. "Don't let them reach it!" And he raked his spurs along his horse's ribs. "We won't catch them," warned Saul. "They'll get into the rocks." "Damn it! God damn it!" groaned Sean. In the past few minutes the light had strengthened. Dawn in Africa comes quickly once it starts. Clearly he could see the leading Boers ride into the rocks, throw themselves from their ponies, and duck into cover. "Faster!" shouted Sean in agony. "Faster!" As he saw the chance of quick success slip from his grasp. Already Mausers were talking back from the lower slopes of the kopje, and the last Burghers were down and scurrying into the rocks. Loose ponies turned wildly into his line, empty stirrups flapping, eyes wide with terror, forcing his men to swerve into each other, dissipating the force of the charge. A loose pack mule with a small leather pack upon its back climbed up through the rocks until a stray bullet killed it and it rolled into a deep crevice. But nobody saw it fall. Sean felt the horse between his legs jerk, and he was thrown with such violence that the stirrup leathers snapped like cotton, and he went up and out, hung for a sickening moment, and then swooped down to hit the ground with his chest and shoulder and the side of his face. While he lay in the grass, the charge spent itself like a wave on the kopje, then eddied and swirled into confusion. Dimly, Sean was aware of the hooves that trampled about his head, of the sound of the Mausers and the shouts of the men who were swept by them. "Dismount! Get down and follow them!" Saul's voice, and the tone of it roused Sean. With his hands under his chest, he pushed himself into a sitting position. The side of his face burned where the skin had been smeared away. His nose was bleeding, and the blood turned the earth in his mouth to a gritty paste. His left arm was numb to the shoulder, and he had lost his rifle. Dully he tried to spit the filth from his mouth, while he peered at the chaos about him, trying to make sense of it. He shook his head, to joggle the apathy from his brain, while all around him men were being cut down at point-blank range by the Mausers. "Dismount! Dismount!" The urgency of Saul's voice brought Sean unsteadily to his feet. "Get down, you bastards!" he took up the cry. "Get down and chase them!" A horse brushed against him, and he staggered but kept his balance. The trooper slid down from its back beside Sean. "Are you all right, Colonel?" He reached out to steady Sean. But a bullet took him in the chest below his raised arm and killed him instantly. Sean stared down at the body and felt his brain click back into focus. "The bastards!" he snarled and snatched up the man's rifle. Then, "Come on!" he roared. "Follow me!" And he led them out of the shambles of struggling horses into the rocks. In the next half hour, grimly and irresistibly, they used their superior numbers to drive the Boers back up the kopje. Each outcrop of rocks was a strong point that had to be assaulted and carried and paid for in blood. On a front of perhaps 200 yards, the attack became a series of isolated skirmishes over which Sean could not maintain command. He gathered those men who were near him, and boulder by boulder they fought their way towards the top, while the burghers in front of him held each position until the last moment, and then fell back on the next. The top of the kopje was flattened into a saucer, with 50 feet of steep open ground falling away on all sides, and finally 60 burghers reached this natural fortress and held it with the determination of men who knew that they had fought for the last time. Twice they threw the British from the lip of the saucer and sent them scrambling and sliding back into the shelter of the broken rock below. After the second repulse, a heavy, unnatural silence settled on the kopje. Sean sat with his back to a rock and took the water bottle that the corporal offered him. He rinsed the slime of blood and congealing saliva from his mouth and spat it pink onto the ground beside him. Then he tilted the bottle and swallowed twice with his eyes tightly closed in the intense pleasure of drinking.
"Thanks," he passed the bottle back. "More?" the corporal asked.
"No."
Sean shook his head and looked back down the slope. The sun was well up now, throwing long shadows behind the horses that were grazing far out across the veldt below. But at the foot of the slope lay the dead animals, most of them on their sides with legs thrust stiffly out. Blanket rolls had burst open to litter the grass with the pathetic possessions of the dead men around them. The men in their khaki and brown were as inconspicuous as piles of dead leaves in the grass, mostly British, but with here and there a burgher lying amongst them in the fellowship of death.
"Mbijani," Sean spoke softly to the big Zulu, who squatted beside him. "Find Inkosi Saul, and bring him to see me here."
He watched the Zulu crawl away. Mbijani had been left behind at the start of that wild gallop, but before Sean was halfway up the kopje, he had glanced back to find him kneeling 2 paces behind, ready with a bandolier of ammunition, for the moment when Sean needed it. Neither of them had spoken until this moment. Between them, words were seldom necessary. Sean fingered the raw greys on his face and listened to the murmured conversation of the men around him. Twice he heard clearly the voices of Boers from the saucer above them, and once he heard a burgher laugh. They were very close, and Sean moved uneasily against the rock. Within minutes, Mbijani was back with Saul crawling behind him. When he saw Sean, Saul's expression changed quickly.
"Your face, are you all right?"
"Cut myself shaving," Sean grinned at him. "Have a seat, make yourself comfortable."
Saul crawled the last few yards and settled himself against Sean's rock.
"Now what?" he asked.
10 minutes rest and then we're going up again," Sean told him, "but this time with a little more purpose. I want you to work around the back of the kopje with half the men. Take Eccles with you. We'll rush their whole perimeter at the same moment. When you're in position, fire 3 shots in quick succession, then count slowly to 20. I'll back you from this side."
"Good," Saul nodded. "It'll take me a little while to get round. Don't be impatient."
And he was smiling as he rose to his knees and leaned forward to touch Sean's shoulder. Sean would always remember him like that. Big mouth creased at the corners, smiling with white teeth through 3 days' growth of beard, slouch hat pushed to the back of his head, so his hair fell forward onto his forehead, and sunburned skin flaking from the tip of his nose. The rock behind them was cracked through. If Saul had not leaned forward to make that gesture of affection, he would not have exposed himself. The sniper on the ridge had seen the brim of his hat above the rock, and he held his aim into the crack. At the moment that Saul's fingers touched Sean's shoulder, his head moved across the gap, and the Boer fired. The bullet hit Saul in the right temple, slanted diagonally back through his head, and came out behind his left ear. Their faces were but 18 inches apart, and Sean was smiling into Saul's eyes as the bullet hit. Saul's whole head was distorted by the impact, swelling and bursting like a balloon. His lips stretched so that for an instant his smile was a hideous rubbery thing, and then he was snatched away and thrown sideways down the slope. He slid to a stop, with his head and shoulders mercifully covered by a tuft of the coarse grey grass that grew among the rocks.
but his trunk shivered, and his legs danced and kicked convulsively. For a slow count of 10, Sean did not move, nor did his expression alter. It took him that long to believe what he had seen. Then his face seemed to crumple.
"Saul!" His voice was a croak. "Saul!"
It rose higher, sharp with the realization of his loss. He came slowly to his knees. Now Saul's body was still, very still and relaxed. Again Sean opened his mouth, but this time the sound he uttered was without form. The way an old bull buffalo bellows at the heart shot. That way Sean gave expression to his grief. A low, shuddering cry that carried to the men in the rocks around him and to the boers in the saucer above. He made no attempt to touch Saul. He stared at him.
"Nkosi!" Imbijani was appalled at what he saw on Sean's face. His tunic was stiff with his own dried blood. The graze across his cheek was swollen and inflamed and wept pale lymph.
But it was the eyes that alarmed Imbijani.
"Nkosi!"
Imbijani tried to restrain him, but Sean did not hear. His eyes were glazing over with the madness that had taken the place of his grief. His head hunched down on his shoulders, and he growled like an animal.
"Take them! Take the bastards!"
And he went up and over the rock in a twisting leap with the bayoneted rifle held against his chest.
"Come on!"
he roared and went up the slope so fast that only one bullet hit him. But it did not stop him, and he was over the lip roaring and clubbing and hacking with the bayonet. From the rocks, 400 of his men swarmed up after him and boiled over the lip of the saucer. But before they reached Sean, he was face to face with Jan Polis Larue. This time it was no match. Jan Polis was wasted and sick, a gaunt skeleton of the man he had been. His rifle was empty, and he fumbled with the reload. He looked up and recognized Sean, saw him tall and splattered with blood, saw the bayonet in his hands and the madness in his eyes.
"Sean!"
he said, and lifted the empty rifle to meet the bayonet. But he could not hold it. With Sean's weight behind it, the bayonet glanced off the rock and went on. Jan Polis felt the tingling slide of the steel through his reluctant flesh, and he went over backwards with the bayonet in him.
"Sean!"
he cried from his back. Sean stood over him and plucked the bayonet out. He lifted it high with both hands, his whole body poised to drive it down again. They stared at each other. The British charge swept past them, and they were alone. One man wounded in the grass, and the other wounded above him with the bayoneted rifle and the madness still on him. The vanquished in the grass, who had fought and suffered, and sacrificed the lives of those he loved. The victor above him, who had fought and suffered, and sacrificed the lives of those he loved. The game was war. The prize was a land. The penalty for defeat was death.
"Marked at Clar. Make it finished," Larue told him quietly.
The madness went out in Sean like the flame of a candle. He lowered the bayoneted rifle and let it drop. The weakness of his wound caught up with him, and he staggered. With surprise, he looked down at his belly and clasped his hands over the wound. And then he sank down to sit beside Jan Polis. In the saucer, the fight was over. It was a long column. Behind the van rode the prisoners, many of them mounted two up. Then followed the wounded, each in a horse litter of poles and blankets. Behind them the Scotch cart, and finally Eccles and 200 troopers of the rearguard. Their progress was slow and dismal. In the Scotch cart, neither Sean nor Jan Polis spoke again. They lay in pain, bracing themselves against the jolt and lurch, with the sun beating down mercilessly upon them. In that dreamlike state induced by pain and loss of blood, Sean was thinking of Saul. At times he would convince himself that it had not happened, and he would experience a rush of relief as though he had woken from a nightmare to find it was not reality. Saul was alive after all. But then his mind would focus with clarity, and Saul was dead again. Saul was wrapped in a blanket with the earth above him, and all they had planned was down there with him. Then Sean would grapple once more with the unanswerable.
"Ruth!"
he cried aloud, so that Jan Polis beside him stirred uneasily.
"Are you all right, Sean?"
But Sean did not hear him.
Now there was Ruth. Now there was Ruth alone. He felt joy then in his loss, joy quickly swamped with guilt. For an instant he'd been glad that Saul was dead, and his treachery sickened him and ached like the bullet in his guts. But still there was Ruth, and Saul was dead. I must not think of it like that, I must not think. And he struggled up into a sitting position and clung to the side of the Scotch cart.
Lie down, Sean,
Jan Polus told him. You'll bleed again.
You, Sean shouted at him. You killed him.
Yah, LaRue nodded his red beard into his chest. I killed them, but you also. All of us, yah, we killed them. And he reached up and took Sean's arm and drew him down into the blankets. Now lie still or we'll bury you also.
But why, Boar? Why?
Sean asked softly. Does it matter why? They are dead.
And now what happens?
Sean covered his eyes from the sun. We go on living. That is all. We just go on.
But what was it about? Why did we fight?
I don't know. Once I knew clearly, but now I have lost the reason, LaRue answered. They were silent for a long time, and then they began to talk again, groping together for the things that must take the place of that which had filled these last 3 years. Twice that afternoon the column halted briefly while they buried men who had died of their wounds. And each of these deaths, one a burgher and the other a trooper, gave poignancy and direction to the talk in the Scotch cart. In the evening they met a patrol that was scouting ahead of the big columns returning from the Padda River. A young lieutenant came to the Scotch cart and saluted Sean. I have a message for you from General Aitchison, sir.
Yes.
This fellow LaRue got away from us at the Padda. Zietzman, the other Boer leader, was killed, but LaRue got away.
This is General LaRue, Sean told him.
Good God, he stared at LaRue.
You caught him?
I say, well done, sir. Jolly well done. In the past 2 years, Jan Polus had become a legend to the British, so that the lieutenant examined him now with frank curiosity.
"What is your message?" Sean snapped.
"Sorry, sir." The youngster dragged his eyes away from Jan Polus. "All the Boer leaders are meeting at Vereeniging. We are to give them safe conduct into the garrison. General Aitchison wanted you to try to contact LaRue with the offer. But that won't be difficult now. Jolly good show, sir."
"Thank you, Lieutenant. Please tell General Aitchison that we'll be in Vereeniging tomorrow."
They watched the patrol ride away and disappear over a fold in the land.
So, growled LaRue, it's surrender, then.
No, Sean contradicted him.
It's peace.